from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, I want to start out tonight with Ned Ryan. Ned Ryan is a former presidential writer for George W. Bush, and the son of former U.S. Congressman Jim Ryan. You all know Jim Ryan is the first high school student ever to run a four-minute mile. And Ned's website is AmericanMajority.org. That's AmericanMajority.org. And I thought I'd sit down with Ned and talk about how those on the left are flooding some conservative radio talk shows with phone calls about the healthcare debacle. It's an interesting interview. I did it about an hour ago, and I thought I'd share it with you. Hi, we're back. My next guest, Ned Ryan, is a former presidential writer for George W. Bush and the son of the former U.S. Congressman Jim Ryan. His website, AmericanMajority.org, I suggest you all go there, AmericanMajority.org, says that it's a non-profit, national, non-partisan political training institute whose mission is to train and equip a national network of leaders committed to individual freedom through limited government and the free market. It's headquartered in Purcellville, Virginia, and it's a pleasure to have Ned on the show tonight. Welcome, sir.
Dana, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Listen, I brought you on the show tonight to talk about, and now I've tried to get on this website a couple of times today, and it seems to be down, but nevertheless, I've talked about it many times on my program about the Obama administration and their creative way of trying to, and I'm saying that in jest, of trying to dominate the media, whether it's the same person who writes the same letter to the editor of several different newspapers across the United States. It's actually comical. We talked about that a few months ago, to the fact where they want liberals to phone all the talk radio stations, the conservative talk radio stations, because they're the only ones that are out there, and try to push the healthcare debacle. It's just nuts. Let's talk about that.
It is, and what you're referring to is radio.barackobama.com, and I find it highly amusing because, and ironic and hypocritical, because one of the things that the left has attempted to do is accuse think this is not really authentic crap. And yet now with this attempt with radio.barackobama.com, what they're trying to really do is astroturf support for this, like you said, a debacle of a healthcare bill by putting in place talking points where they can click and connect with a radio show, and when they're done there, click to another radio show, another. And you know what? You could have one person making 5-10 calls across the country and making it appear as though there was a real grassroots swell of support for healthcare when that's not the case at all. So it is amusing, somewhat ingenious, but I don't think it's going to work. I mean, most of the American people, you know, you've seen the polls as well as I have, that they're not in support of this healthcare. They know there has to be some reform, but it's not this government-mandated bill that's being discussed.
Well, this government certainly wants to ram everything down your throat, and we all know that if you ram too much stuff on AstroTurf, like you say, you end up with turf toe, and that's pretty painful. And I don't think, and with the Obama's health care, I don't think you'd get any help for that. Anyway, let's talk about this a little bit. Your organization, the American Majority, talks about being a nonprofit, nonpartisan, and nonpartisan is the important part that I'd like to get you to explain a little bit.
Well, no, here's what we do. We've been around for just over 2 years. We launched January of 2008. With the idea of creating a farm team of conservative leadership. And what we do is we go down and we identify the state and local office, people that have the potential to run for school board or city council or county commission all the way up to state senate, and really based in principle, not party. We don't advocate one party over another, fully realizing we're in a two-party system. But we don't advocate a party, we advocate principle. And our hope is that we will continue to identify and train up a new generation of leadership. We've got six state offices around the country. And, you know, the great thing that's encouraging, Dana, is we're starting to have success. People we've helped identify and train are winning. We just had 19 of 25 school board candidates win in Oklahoma, you know, building off some other successes on city council races in other states. But, you know, and what we're also doing, which is exciting to me, is training grassroots activists to be even more effective. So we do the candidate identification and training, but we also do a lot of activist training and teach people how to be effective online and offline. So it's very exciting, and we're very busy right now, but it's great. And find out more about us at AmericanMajority.org.
If you're just tuning in, Ned Ryan is here. And let's talk a little bit about the Obama administration and their paranoia with talk radio. Fixation, I guess, is a good term, whether it's Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or whoever. We could probably list 25 names here. Why? I don't get it, because these hosts have a, and you used the term grassroots, and I think that's probably as important as anything, a grassroots listenership following, and I think the Obama administration is scared of them.
No, they are, because they do realize that these radio talk show hosts, Hannity and Limbaugh and Beck, and you can name, you're right, dozens of people, do have a direct line to the grassroots, and the grassroots listens to them in the millions, tens of millions. They realize that they are a very important part of the debate, and they have a very powerful platform to communicate ideas that the Obama administration doesn't agree with. And, I think they do feel threatened. I feel that in some ways they feel threatened because they know they can't control it. And, you know, this is, again, another attempt with this radio.barackobama.com is to try and somehow combat the influence of the radio talk show host. And I don't think it's going to work. In fact, I think it'll be an abysmal failure. Which is amusing, because I think Organizing for America, which this effort is coming out of, has not really been that effective in the last few months, and I think this is going to be another example of its ineffectiveness.
You know, ineffectiveness is one term, but it's laughable, in fact. You know, how they try to do these things, whether it's sometimes the president himself, right down to his groups of organizers, how they try to manipulate the media, whether it's print or MSNBC, you can't get more of a network in your pocket if you're the Obama administration than that network. It's amazing, yet they continue to do it and ignore what the people are having to say, and that's the sad part about all this. Your thoughts?
No, you're exactly right. I'm thinking you've got most of the major news networks in your back pocket. You've got MSNBC. You've got all of these other, you've got Huffington Post. You've got all Daily Coast. You've got all these left-leaning or purely left entities out there, and you seem fixated on the few entities like Fox News or Limbaugh Hannity that aren't in lockstep with you and are, in fact, challenging you. And it is a bit amusing to see the reaction to it. But again, it is a bit perplexing when you think about all the other tools they have at their resources in their toolbox. And they can't seem to get off the radio talk shows and Fox News, and they keep on hammering away at it. And I've got to tell you, Dana, it's not a winning strategy.
It's not
going to be a winning strategy for them.
One thing I find comical, and I'm going to let you go here pretty quick because I know you're busy, is tonight the major late night talk shows. Letterman is having Mitt Romney on, or on Tuesday night, I'm sorry, and Leno is going to have Sarah Palin, I believe. And what a great success for conservatism to have those two left wing talk show hosts bringing on two conservatives. It's actually quite comical, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And, you know, the thing that I'm hoping to see is, Dana, I think in this whole, the last year and a half, we've really seen, obviously, an explosion of involvement in 2009 with the Tea Parties. But the thing is, as it starts to go, and I believe this is going to happen over the next year or two, conservatism is, I'm convinced the American people identify with the ideas of conservatism more than we think they do.
Yeah.
And as it goes more mainstream, you're going to start to see more of these things happen, that you're going to see them in more mainstream outlets, but also embraced by the American people. I'm convinced that the American people want to see less government. They don't want to see more government intrusion into their lives. They want greater fiscal responsibility, and it's great that you start to see people like Palin and Romney and others getting more face time with the American people, and I hope that it'll continue that way.
Well, the left had tried with Air America, and that went down the crapper just as fast as you could flush it, and you still see a small remnant of that with the Joy Behars and the Donnie Deutsches around, but really the way that they try to voice their side to the people is failing miserably, and how they're continuing with this is just so wrong. Ned, tell us again how people can get a hold of the American Majority.
Come to AmericanMajority.org or email us info@AmericanMajority.org. We'd love for you, anybody listening, to be involved with us. We've got great resources. You can go to AmericanMajority.org and click on the resource tab. We've got podcasts, we've got manuals, we've got presentations, if people are interested in running for office or becoming a more effective activist. We've got a lot of stuff online that they can tap into, and we've got great trainings. We did 151 trainings in 26 different states last year, so we get out there, we're busy, but tap into the resources online at AmericanMajority.org.
Well, you're doing great work. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Ned Ryan. He's a former presidential writer for George W. Bush and the son of the former U.S. Congressman Jim Ryan. And again, the webpage is AmericanMajority.org. That's AmericanMajority.org. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. And I want to skip through the next break and because we've got a busy night ahead of us, and go right to my next guest, Jessica Taloney. You'll know her as a TV reporter for WKRG. Television. She's been following the Becca McEvoy case. You all know the sad story of the young girl who was raped and sodomized and sadly was killed in a traffic accident on her way to a grand jury hearing. There is a huge update in this case, some breaking news in the McEvoy case for those of you that have followed it. And let's go right to Jessica. Okay, you'll know my next guest, Jessica Taloney, as a reporter for TV station WKRG, someone who I've turned to many times to talk about the sad case of Becca McEvoy. And on the line with me is Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Hi there.
How are you?
Very good.
Now, we've talked about Becca McEvoy many, many times. My audience we'll remember the case, but for those that are just tuning in for the first time, maybe just remind them a little bit what this case was all about.
Well, Rebecca McEvoy is an 11-year-old girl who, golly, it's 3 years now, it was December 2006, first turned to her best friend and then to her older sister and told them an account of a rape. She said she was raped by her stepfather, who at the time was also a police officer for one of our local police departments. And from there, of course, the investigation began. Her stepfather, Bob Engel, was arrested. And she went through, you know, I guess given several statements. She, of course, went to doctors. She did interviews with police over the course of the next year until she was tragically killed in a car accident in 2007, or rather 2008, January 2008. And that really raised some big questions with her case, constitutional questions that Bob Engel's attorney raised, questioning whether or not the case could even go forward without Bob Engel having an opportunity to confront his accuser. And that's kind of the saga that went on for the 3 years up until last month when Bob Engel was convicted by a jury of raping Rebecca, of sodomizing Rebecca, and of sexually abusing Rebecca.
And we've covered the story many times here on the show with the family. In fact, I'm going to be interviewing Aidan McEvoy this evening during the program to talk a little bit more about it. But this case, the constitutional side aside, because there was talks of appeal and all that sort of stuff, with Bob Engel, the former Chickasaw police officer who I believe was out on bail, there's an update on him, is there not?
Well, he was out on bond. After he was convicted in January, the judge let him go home with a GPS, like an ankle bracelet of sorts, and he was supposed to be confined to his home with the exception of going to see his attorney. And then last Friday, he was scheduled to be sentenced, and the day before that, which would have been last Thursday, he was found dead in his home, and the word we're getting from police is that he did take his own life.
Well, this isn't unusual in cases like this. Sometimes while they're in custody waiting for sentencing or they're out waiting for sentencing. Some call it a coward's way out. I won't comment on that one way or the other. What's the reaction from the family?
Well, the family, quite honestly, even that night and the next day, said they were relieved. They knew what was ahead of them. They knew that there were probably months, if not years, of appeals ahead of them. And they don't have to worry about that anymore. That's straight from the family. We don't know a whole lot of the circumstances surrounding the suicide itself. We know that Bob Engel was found in his home in Mobile, and he was found with two handguns. And so I guess from that we've assumed that he shot himself. But one of the interesting things that we learned on Friday from his attorney, and you'll know you don't hear much from his attorney throughout this entire process. His attorney, Michael Harbin, refused to talk to reporters the entire time until Friday after Bob Engel's death. And he told us that there was a secret hearing of sorts scheduled for Thursday, the day before the Senate thing, and someone was going to speak on Bob's behalf. Someone was going to speak for him, perhaps say good things before the Senate thing. We don't know who that person is. We didn't know about that hearing prior to. Best we can tell, it was a closed-door hearing. And his attorney was waiting for him there at that hearing, and Bob Engel never showed up.
There was some speculation, this is my last question for you, about other victims that may or may come forward. Any more on that, or is this a closed case now?
Well, I think best we can tell it's a closed case. The family in the beginning, in the initial stages, I guess not necessarily the initial stages of the investigation, but after Rebecca's death, that's really when the media got involved, is when there were questions of whether or not the case would go forward. In those initial stages, the family did raise questions of whether there would be more victims. They didn't have names, or they never came forward, I guess, publicly with names if they did have them. At one point, the prosecutor on the case made a public plea in front of our TV cameras and said, if you're a victim of Bob Engel's, come forward. But as far as we know, no other victims have ever come forward.
Thank you, Jessica.
No problem.
Appreciate you coming on. Bye-bye. That's Jessica Taloney, reporter for WKRG-TV, with an update on the McAvoy case. And I've said it many times, and I'll keep saying it again, and I'm always accused of sounding like a broken record. Justice is served in many ways, and in this case, justice was served. I'm Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. You heard my last guest, Jessica Taloney from WKRG-TV, update you on the dramatic events of the Becca McAvoy case, and I thought I would bring on Becca's dad, Aiden McAvoy, to talk a little bit. Hi, Aiden.
Hey, how you doing, Dana?
I'm doing fine. Welcome back to the show. You know, I got to tell you, I've been doing this show for 12 years, and as you know, I'm a police officer too. I've been on the job for 28 years, and this case of Becca's is probably one of the most touching cases, the one that I've thought about the most in all my time. This is a case where, you know, gol darn it, we're not supposed to bury our kids. Our kids are supposed to bury us, and to see them victimized and to see this story the way that it went, and then the conclusion, it's never really over, but I termed it a coward's way out a little while ago. I wanted to bring you on, my friend, to talk a little bit about it. And first of all, tell my audience who you are, and let's talk about Becca a bit.
Well, I'm Becca's dad, Aiden McAvoy, 24-year veteran of the Chickasaw Police Department.
And Becca was with you at the time she died, correct?
That's correct. We were in a tragic accident back in January. It was 2 years ago. Driver cross lanes, catching us almost head-on, and she was asleep in the backseat of our minivan and was ejected from the impact and was killed on impact.
And, you know, I got to tell you, Aiden, you know, you and I have never met face-to-face, but I feel that you and I are friends. And that the story itself, and I don't want to rehash it for you because, my God, you've lived it enough, is so tragic, and all the constitutional arguments and Crawford versus Washington and all this nonsense. But Bob Engel, the guy that was convicted of molesting Becca, raping, sodomizing. He took his own life. When did you first get the news?
My attorney called me and said she'd like to meet with the family immediately. She had some news. And she came to my department with several of her staff and my investigator from the Saraland Police Department who investigated her case and told us that he failed to show up for a court hearing. And when they went to go check on him, they found him dead at his home from a gunshot wound.
I used the term coward's way out. Your first thoughts when you heard that Bob Engel had killed himself?
My first thought was just a great relief that the state hadn't got to support him and he can hurt no more children.
Yeah.
But I really felt sorry for the family that he did this. All I ever wanted out of this was just for my daughter and for him to serve time.
Yeah.
And get what he gave her.
You know, Bob, or I'm sorry, God, Aiden.
That's okay.
Bob Engel is, you know, I've always said it many times, is there's different forms of justice. You get justice in court, and there are other forms of justice when you meet your maker, and I'm sure justice will be served on Bob Engel. But again, you know, and I think it shows a lot of class in your side that you, his family you have to feel bad for, and your family and all the tragedy that's gone through this. You know, as a police officer, you've seen cases where those that have been convicted out on bond or are waiting to be sentenced that are still in custody, the people decide to take their own lives. I've used that term coward's way out. You know, the sense of relief your family felt or you felt initially, I can totally understand that. But let's talk about Bob Engel. Why the hell did he have guns at home?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, Dana. When it came to that, after he was pronounced guilty, he was given a week before they gave him a bond hearing, and they gave him basically just a home monitoring, even though he'd been found guilty on 3 Class A felonies and was allowed to walk the streets.
Yeah.
He was on a home monitor, but still allowed, he was on the streets. He should have been locked up immediately, not allowed to be on the streets.
Yeah, you're right. And why these things happen? Is it fate? Is it, you know, I've had a couple of people comment to me, he got what was coming to him. You know, besides that, whether you believe in that sort of justice or him serving a sentence and you know, having the state support him, the thing is protecting those on the street. You swore an oath 24 years ago to protect those. You want to protect your family, but, you know, Aiden, without getting into too much of Becca's case, let's take the badge off for a second, and you're a father, and you're trying to handle something like this and keep your family together. How difficult is that?
It's very difficult. I've been putting people in jail for the last 24 years and then have to be on the other side of the badge trying to defend my daughter. With our justice system, it has its place, but there's some rules that you have to make exceptions for the victims that when a small child is violated like that and she's no longer here, somebody has to speak for her.
Right.
I agree, and I agree that somebody has the right to face their accuser. But when that person's made statements to law enforcement, grand jury, counselors, but nobody wanted to hear that. They said, if she can't be cross-examined, they didn't want to hear it. It's just not right for the families.
I've used the term re-victimization many times. And
that's exactly what it is.
To see Becca re-victimized and your family re-victimized was just tragic. And there are many other cases actually across the United States similar to those, although not with the events that have affected your family, but every family is affected differently. How is your family coping now, Aiden?
Right now, everybody has just a great sense of relief that there's no more appeals, there's no bond hearings, there's no more parole hearings, and Becca finally has some closure.
I know Becca is watching, looking down. I truly believe that. And she is, you know, a guardian angel. God, all you got to do is look at her picture and you can see that. How tough is it, you know, holidays, school starting, all these sorts of things. It's a dumb question on my part to say how tough it is, but when you sit down and you look at your situation, and if I was to give you, and I'm going to give you a minute here to give advice to any other family that may be going through something different, you know, something similar to what you're going through, what would that advice be, Aiden?
Don't give up. Keep digging. If it wasn't for people like you, my attorney, and different groups like Bikers Against Child Abuse, helping get Becca's case in the media and spreading the word that victims have rights, I don't think it would have went on. And my ex-wife's family was a godsend on trying to get a hold of you and other people to get our case out, so it would be heard.
You know, I'm glad I could help in any small way. And I guess my last question for you, my friend, is how are you doing? You were pretty bashed up in that accident.
Well, I went through a long road of rehabilitation. During my rehabilitation, I met my new wife. We went to school together, and after my wreck, she was helping teaching a grief share program to help people cope with losing their loved one. And she had recently lost her husband to a massive heart attack, and we kind of bonded. And months later, we got married, and she's been my saving grace.
Well, good for you. You know, your family is strong. I want you to say hi to all of them for me. And how this case ended, actually, I didn't expect it to end this way, but I'm not surprised it ended this way. I'm glad there's some closure. I'm glad justice has been served, so to speak. And, Aiden, let's stay in touch, okay?
Yes, sir. I sure appreciate all you've done for us.
No problem. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Bye, Aiden.
Bye-bye.
That's Aiden McAvoy, Becca McAvoy's dad. God darn it, you know. You heard him get choked up a little bit, and it's tough for me not to get choked up, too. In this case, Bob Engel took his own life before he had a chance to be sentenced. Some will say that's justice. You know, I'll let you decide what that's about. But Bob Engel won't be around to victimize any more young children. And the law, the Crawford versus Washington law, is certainly something that needs to be looked at by legislators because, like Aiden McAvoy says, we have to protect victims. That is so important. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a break and come back with Robin Sachs and Catherine Harper Lee from the Justice League of Ohio to talk about another case, the Cherish Lewis case, one that has not seen enough media coverage, and it's something that you better sit back and listen closely to because it will shock you what's going on with that one. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back, and I promise not to get choked up in the segment, but I can't talk to Aiden McAvoy without getting choked up a little bit. That case is just so sad, and in a way, I'm glad to see it close this way. They don't have to go through all the appeals, but there's another case that it just hasn't made the media the way that it should have. We've talked about it here on the show. If you happen to listen to Justice Interrupted last night and we're looking forward to hearing Robin Sachs and heard my terrible voice instead, we talked to my next guest, Catherine Harper Lee from the Justice League of Ohio and Robin Sachs. She wasn't there last night, but I filled in for her. But she is here tonight with her Nothing But the Sachs segment to talk about the Cherish Lewis case. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. Thank you for taking over for me. I knew that you did an amazing job.
Oh, I don't know about that. But let's start with Catherine. Tell us a little bit about the Justice League of Ohio.
Well, the Justice League is a non-profit crime victims' rights legal clinic. We assist victims of crime when they feel that their rights have been violated throughout the criminal justice process. So we provide attorneys to them to represent them in criminal court to protect their rights.
And it's just that simple. And you and I actually interviewed you a couple years ago or 3 years ago, whatever it was, about a dopey judge in Ohio. And I'm always amazed with organizations like yours, Kathy, and people like you, the hard work that you do to help victims. Because we just keep seeing that re-victimization in today's society, not only through the courts, just through the process itself. What's going on? What's so wrong today? You know, I think we've got a pretty good system. It could be a lot worse, but we're just not doing enough to help victims.
Well, we do, but, you know, for many, many years now, in Ohio it's been 14 years, we've recognized that citizens victimized by crime need to have legal rights as well, just as defendants and offenders do. And so we've instituted those laws to protect citizens victimized by crime, to help restore some faith and balance in the system, but yet those rights are consistently ignored and violated. And so we've just not come to that point yet where there is a consistent acknowledgement of crime victims' rights and the need to protect those rights so that we can have fair and balanced outcomes.
And that's so important. And if you want to learn more about the Justice League of Ohio, go to thejusticeleagueohio.org. Robin Sachs, the Cherish Lewis case is one that you've written about, you've talked about. In fact, on the Women in Crime blog, you're getting kind of kicked around a little bit about. But this is a story that it's shocking. It's amazing that the media hasn't picked it up the way that they should. Tell us your thoughts on Cherish Lewis, and then we'll get back to Kathy about it.
Well, unfortunately, like Kathy and myself, and let me kind of just actually backtrack a bit, the great thing with partnering with the Justice League of Ohio is that we at Justice Interrupted have a mutual interest, which is to bring awareness to the cases that badly need awareness, that so badly need awareness, and so badly need justice. I mean, if a defendant's rights are violated, there's all kinds of organizations, very large organizations, ACLU and you know, organizations of that sort that come forward really quickly standing behind defendants. But when a victim is violated, it seems that and rights are violated and judges don't act appropriately, you don't see the ACLU running to the victim, you know, standing behind the victim and writing articles and making motions and doing things. And so thank goodness for Kathy and the Justice League of Ohio for doing what they're doing from the legal end, because what I'm doing with Stacey Dietrich and yourself from the mouthpiece end is to bring the other component, which is the awareness. And this case, what I think that ends up happening for whatever reason is that when a case isn't handled correctly and it is the victim who is re-victimized, all of a sudden people get real nervous and skittish about it, as if it's impossible to believe that a justice system is failing the victim. Yet when a defendant's rights are violated, it seems so easy for people to wrap their brain around it. Except with one little tiny asterisk that I have to say is that then we go and we see cases like the Philip Garrido and the Dugard and all the cases that you and I so aptly call the missed opportunities cases, where there's hundreds of deaths and hundreds of victimized children and raped individuals and so forth. And then everyone goes, oh, well, all the signs or symptoms were there. Why didn't anyone do anything about it? And then the people who are doing things about it, like all of us on this show at this exact moment, get looked at, you know, through an eyes of, you know, how are we trying to individually benefit? And that's what the most unbelievable part of this case is, from as an example of the more macro issue of the fact that people don't want to believe that our society victimizes and re-victimizes victims.
Kathy Harper Lee from the Justice League of Ohio. Cherish Lewis, if I use the term drop the ball, I think it's a fair term with this case. There's just a huge mess of problems. Let's give you the podium here. Tell us about them.
Yeah, drop the ball is exactly the right term. Drop the ball across the board on this case. Yeah, drop the ball beginning when the child first reported in November of 07 and child was immediately taken to the hospital, had bruises all over her body, swollen vagina, blood in her urine, abscess on her rectum, and the child reported both physical and sexual abuse. First drop the ball happened when detective that took over the case did not refer the case to the proper jurisdiction, which was Tampa, Florida at the time, and did not even interview the perpetrator. Then it winds up in domestic relations court, and having the evidence presented in domestic relations court, and having one deputy from actually the same department that did a phenomenal job that first interviewed the child at the hospital testify to the extent of the injuries, that the injuries were man-made, as far as the bruising and the physical abuse, that it did not occur from a fall, you know, describing, you know, just the massive bruises, but the fingerprints on the thighs, the fingerprints around the wrist, the what looked to appear to be cigarette burns on the child's thighs, to listening to Children's Services testify, and then even the guardian ad litem in the case testify how the child disclosed to her sexual abuse, demonstrated on a doll how it was done, named her father, and then the guardian ad litem went on to say that she believes the child and list the reasoning and the rationale as to why she believes the child. So the domestic relations court hears all of this testimony, goes on, though, to not allow certain evidence to be admitted, such as medical reports and photographs of the injuries, and then turns around and grants the father, the alleged perpetrator, custody of the child and forces the mother to relinquish the child to him yet again. And again, he takes her out of state, next time to Oceanside, California. The child returns and complains of vaginal pain, is taken immediately to the hospital, is examined, and Children's Services substantiate sexual abuse. And then at the very next hearing with the domestic relations court judge, the mother is pleading to the judge to please see, look at this letter of substantiation from Children's Services, listen to the testimony, not make any decisions that would impact the safety of her child, and the judge just absolutely ignores her pleas, and then orders that the father can have the child for 7 months again. Well, at this point in time, the mother's words were, he ordered her to return the child immediately, instantly, and her comment was, you know, I don't know where she is. And then for that, she is remanded to custody, and she's been in jail for over 7 months now, and her child remains in hiding just to be free from abuse.
Robin, 15 years, felony prosecutions, seeing a case like this, and if you want to learn more about the case, go to the justiceleagueohio.org, and you can find out more about it. Robin, when you see this case and you see the public documents, the court documents, and look at the evidence, you got to be scratching your head.
I'm beyond scratching my head. I'm you know, scratching down the doors of the people who have made these decisions, wondering what is going on. But the thing that's so troubling about this case, that beyond the atrocities that you hear right now, which just as you would think, oh my goodness, how much worse can it be? How much more? How many more injustices can there be? There are people out there who are trying to bring awareness to this case, only to be further bullied by, suspect, alleged perpetrator's family. I myself have received threatening comments on my personal voicemail, and various voicemails around, and emails have been sent to me. And people who have written about this case have equally been threatened. And when the bullying continues in that way, instead of being a fact-finding, truth-seeking process in which our government has given us that right to have, it's impossible to ever get at justice. And it's atrocious. And the other thing that's so atrocious about this case is that there has been a group of people on Facebook who, under the auspice of looking and appearing that they are on one side, really are supporters of another side and are creating the appearance of having supporters without really having supporters. So it's not just abuse to Cherish. It's not just abuse to the minor child. And not just abuse to the system, but it's abusing us, concerned court watchers, concerned justice seekers who have no personal interest. I've never met Cherish in my life. All I have made my opinions on is based on what I've seen and read. Just like all of us do each and every day when we listen to television and hear stories, we all form opinions. And to not allow for the access of that information sometimes makes me think, are we really in the United States of America right now?
You know, there's always, Catherine Harper Lee, there's always two sides to every story, of course, but when you look at the facts, and then Robin mentioned it. In fact, I've even got a couple of comments, and I'm sure I'll get more after tonight's show, but that's fine. There's always that strange faction out there that no matter what you say, they always have to take the opposite side. My question to you, though, is the media. What's wrong with the media, the local media in the jurisdiction this happened, the national media? You know, Robin has covered it. I've covered it. Some others have spoken about it, but it's just not getting the coverage that it should. And I'm curious your thoughts. Why?
You know, I really don't have any. I don't have the answer to the local media. Only then it's somewhat in that incestuous community that really doesn't care to look at the facts. Everything that we have documented, every iota of the information that everyone is looking at as they form their opinion, these are documented facts. They're a part of court records. There are medical reports. There are court transcripts of testimony. There's no refuting those facts. Those facts alone clearly tell the story of what's happened to this child. Now, as far as the rest of the media, I don't know what their apprehension is about not covering this story. It's definitely worthy and in need of coverage. Now, just
can I just jump in, Kathy, for just one second? I don't know that there's apprehension. I don't want there to be an appearance that there has been apprehension. I mean, the media, I'm part of that media, and they pick weird stories, you know, to cover, and the same stories. I mean, some of the traditional outlets cover, you know, the same stories day in and day out, and there hasn't been really any developments, and these are the cases that need it. As a matter of fact, I actually got a personal email from Jim Murray, who had went back and read it, and he's, as you know, the host of the Inside Edition, and, you know, he actually said, I think this case should be covered more widespread, so I'm hoping that we are going to start seeing this case in the media.
Well, that would be great. Anyway, continue on, Kathy.
Sorry.
Well, and you know what, and that is absolutely wonderful. And it is, with Justice Interrupted, with Scared Monkeys, getting this story out, pushing it, and really then piquing mainstream media's interest. And even today, I did an interview with 700 WLW, which has some widespread coverage, a broader coverage. And Bill Cunningham did a wonderful job interviewing. And he's an attorney, former prosecutor. So he knew how to cut right to the questions, you know, Robin, as you do. And that was a wonderful interview to really push it out there and pull that attention even stronger. So, you know, I think it's wonderful if Inside Edition is looking at it, because it definitely deserves and actually needs, it desperately needs that bright, hot spotlight on it just to hold these officials accountable for their actions and for their inaction. Otherwise, the way I see this case playing out, if we don't get some attention, strong attention, more attention to this case on a mainstream media level, then we're going to end up in this appeals process. The Court of Appeals has done a wonderful job in overturning Judge Crowe's decisions in the past. We just had oral arguments on February 11th, and I believe that they're going to overturn every one of his orders on July 24th that began with not allowing her a continuance when she had an attorney, when it was discovered this attorney had an extreme conflict of interest, and that her own attorney, she discovered, had represented Rice on prior criminal allegations. And so there were a number of things that procedurally went wrong, including the contempt. He held her to a felony-level contempt without having a hearing.
Yeah.
Procedurally, everything was wrong. So I think that will be turned around, but my fear is this. We end up right back in front of Judge Crowe. And what we've seen on his track record is he gets overturned and other custody issues where he's claiming Munchausen's and PAS and similar cases, he'll get overturned by the Court of Appeals. It ends up right back in front of his court, and he turns around and gives the alleged perp custody again. So until we get strong attention brought to this, we're going to end up in an appeals nightmare of a cycle.
Yeah, and the strong attention is what's needed. Catherine Harper Lee is here. She's with the Justice League of Ohio, and of course Robin Sachs is here also. We're talking about the Cherish Lewis case. Robin, I watched three or four different shows today, and I made a point, because I knew we were doing this interview tonight, to put a clock on the time given to Kate Gosselin being added to Dancing with the Stars. Now, these were on cable news entertainment / crime shows. And Kate Gosselin, in three shows, got 18 minutes of coverage about her coming on Dancing with the Stars, which absolutely blew my mind. I thought it was incredible. And if you can help get any sort of national coverage to this Cherish Lewis case, that would be fantastic. Your thoughts on, you know, the national media, and hopefully they will grab this story.
Well, I gotta tell you, I mean, it's imperative. I mean, what Kathy just talked about that cycle of, you know, going, fighting an injustice to then get to, you know, then having one decision made by Judge Crow for it to only be reversed on appeal and to be sent back to Judge Crow and for the same decision then to be made again and to be in this ever circular pattern of appeals versus not appeals. I mean, you can imagine why people cave and why people would let their children just in the hands of a perpetrator because they are being so worn down by the system. I mean, thank goodness that Cherish has Kathy and her amazing team of lawyers and advocates and people who are involved in this case. And Kathy's only one person, and you're one show, and I'm one show, and we're literally one case at a time. But the macro level of this whole thing is that this type of behavior changes the entire justice system. And the only thing that, not only does this case need to go to the media, but every case that's ever been in Judge Crow's courtroom needs to be evaluated. I mean, what about all of those victims that have gone through in there? How many young children are in the hands of alleged sexual offenders because Judge Crow awarded custody? And the heat needs to be on him. I'm tired of the heat being on Cherish. She has done everything to protect her child. She's done the bravest, most amazing thing, selfless thing possible, and been subject to criticism and custody and everything else. And for Judge Crow, for what? If there's no justice at the end. So it's maddening. And I intend and want us to see this on every station. But more importantly, besides justice for Cherish and justice, in this case, I want to see justice in all of the cases in Judge Crow's court and for every case in this country.
Absolutely. Kathy, I'll give you the final word. Kathy?
Final word. Yes, I'm on the final word. I'm thinking, what is that final word?
Oh, don't panic.
We are patiently awaiting the Court of Appeals decision, and we do feel that it will be favorable to Cherish. But then again, I mean, it is, as Robin said, imperative that we keep the spotlight on this case, that we increase the intensity of the spotlight on the case to ensure that enough attention is placed on Crow and the decisions that he's making and his disregarding evidence, disregarding expert testimony, that we can somehow get this turned around faster. My fear is, you know, we get right back, you know, the Court of Appeals makes their decision. I think they're going to make a fantastic decision. Then we're right back in front of him.
Yeah.
What's the next order that's going to come from the bench? And what kind of harm is impending harm is that going to do to this child?
Absolutely. And when folks go to the JusticeLeagueOhio.org, how can they learn more about the case?
But go right to the JusticeLeague.com and you will, .org, I'm sorry, the JusticeLeagueOhio.org, and on the very front, you will see a big, fat, bold tagline of Cherish Lewis. You click on that and you can go in and see all of the information about the case, who you can contact to try to help make a difference. You can join the team of supporters. Just by sharing your voice and showing support for Ms. Lewis and the need for the justice system to pay due respect to this case and to ensure justice is finally served.
Absolutely. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, that's Kathy Harper Lee from the Justice League Ohio and former DA Robin Sachs talking about the Cherish Lewis case. Go to that website. It's a case that needs to be heard, and let's hope shows like Inside Edition do pick them up. All right, that's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.